Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. I'd like now to welcome to the program Gail Williams. She is a nurse. She's vice president of the 1199 New Mexico chapter of the Nurses Union at Christa St. Vincent Hospital. And Torsten Rode, he is an ICU nurse and also delegate to this same union. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hello, Marie.
Great to have you both on the air. Now, as many people who have been reading the paper probably know, that Christa St. Vincent and the Nurses Union are in very serious negotiations right now, and we wanted to get it straight from you. What is going on? What's at stake? What are the questions? What are the issues?
Yes, we're in very serious negotiations with Christus right now. There are many demands that have come to the union's attention that affect the Santa Fe healthcare workers and the rights and working conditions, and we have been working pretty tirelessly with them to try to find some areas of common ground. But it's been a difficult task, and now we're, you know, down to some really big major items like staffing and management rights and successorship and issues that we think will affect the very viability of the future of our union. And so, you know, we're working to try to find some common ground, but as I said, it's not been an easy task, and so far we don't have a lot of confidence that that's going to happen with this particular group of people.
Now, let's talk about each of those things. You were mentioning staffing, management rights, succession. Staffing. If you have a hospital that is staffed with nurses, I mean, you were an ICU nurse. What kind of nursing do you do, Gail?
I work in the emergency room.
So all kinds of, you know, sometimes the emergency room is completely full, sometimes it's not. How do you determine what is the proper and above all safe staffing level for a hospital and for the different departments at any given time?
Well, since 1999, the Nurses Union has negotiated staffing grids for all of the units in the hospital, and we've done that in collaboration with management, and so we have come up with numbers of what, you know, would be the minimum level of nurses and ancillary staff that's needed to run a department safely. And on each department, that number and group of people differs. But we have that in writing, and that is something that is enforceable, and it has worked quite well. It may not be perfect, but it has worked fairly well. Of course, there's always situations where someone has a family emergency or needs to go out on leave, or someone just happens to be sick for the day and you don't have the staff that you're supposed to have. And that's where we've had problems with the ability of management to increase staff when we need an increase. There's no problem with decreasing staff if the census seems to be low and they can check that in four-hour increments. And then they have no problem sending nurses home on what we call ATO, or approved time off. We have, however, had our problems with increasing staff when we need additional staff due to increased patient loads.
Talk about what that looks like in some given department.
Well, I can speak from the emergency room department. It would mean that perhaps there's, you know, an influenza or, you know, some kind of infection that's running rampant through our community, and lots of people are getting sick, especially the elderly people and the younger children, pediatric cases. And we find ourselves with lots of admissions, people that are too sick to go home because of respiratory problems and requiring monitoring. And when all the rooms fill up in the individual units, which has happened because it's not that big of a hospital, then what happens is those people often have to stay in the emergency room for an extended period of time. Even though they've been worked up, the orders have been written, they are considered an inpatient, they have no spot to go to, and they are cared for in the emergency room until a bed can become available.
And so in those cases, you are just almost automatically understaffed because they should be elsewhere and you have your regular staff.
Exactly.
And so what happens? What are the dangers in that situation?
Well, the dangers in that situation are that we are not set up to be an inpatient department. We're an outpatient department, an emergency room. And the problem comes with orders are written and need to be taken off and medications need to be started on a schedule and treatments need to, you know, be started and all kinds of different modalities have to be contacted to come and help the patients. And things seem to slow down when they're not in an inpatient setting.
And meanwhile, you still have to attend to the emergency patients who are coming in.
Right. And at the same time, you still have to take the ambulance patients, and the patients keep coming in the front door that are, you know, walking wounded. So basically, it puts a big burden on the emergency room to have to be all things to all people in that situation. And it is very challenging. And sometimes people stay long enough and get enough respiratory treatments and antibiotics and IV fluids, and they start to respond, and they feel like when the next time the doctor comes in to visit them that they think maybe they can go home without actually going into a hospital room. And sometimes that happens, too. They're discharged right from the emergency room.
What does the staffing issue look like from your perspective, Torsten, as an ICU nurse?
Well, I want to go one step back and explain what we had so far a little more. We had a staffing grid. That means we have a specific number of nurses and auxiliary staff, which is aides or techs or secretaries, for a certain number of patients. That means, for example, if we have a unit that has a 4-to-1 ratio for a patient per nurse, when there's a fifth patient, we need another nurse. And those are numbers that were set. Up to very recently, there was a financial penalty assigned to that if staffing or management cannot meet those ratios. It was called BMC, below minimum core. That means if we suddenly had to work with one less tech, one less secretary, or one or two or five less nurses, now that's an extreme example, the nurses that work got a financial, they got time and a half paid for that time.
And they're probably working
considerably harder. The idea of BMC was never to be a money-making machine. It was always considered to be a penalty to be avoided. We much, much rather work with full staffing than getting that money because it is increased workload, it's increased risk, it's definitely increases the stress level for us and the patient. So now what's proposed is to say we're much more flexible, and you've seen probably those full-size ads that have been in a paper now for almost a month every day, talking about that there will be committees and
from put out by Chris to St. Vincent.
By Chris, yes. The ads that we put, the full-size ads that you've seen in the New Mexican here lately, almost daily. And it sounds all very good in theory. The problem with that is that we have no specifics on that, that nobody tells us what are the rights of the committees, what is the accept composition of the committee. Actually, it was proposed, but we're not happy with what the proposals were, which were that most of them were picked by management of the people in the committee. And then also...
Now, the committee would do what?
The committee would set ratios or staffing grids or numbers for a period of time. Which is
now, why don't they want to just leave it the way it is if you say it's working?
Well, there are definitely issues about it. For example, there's units where when you have 29 patients, you get so many nurses. With 30 patients, you need an extra nurse, and the unit has only 30 beds. Well, then it becomes, you know, somewhat silly to go with the grid. There's no problem on our side to look at those grids and say, we can be more flexible. The problem, apparently, that Christus has, it can be rather expensive to keep grids, especially if there's a financial penalty involved with it, if you can't fulfill those numbers, if you can't fill the grid, and then it becomes expensive. And then you see what ads, or in the ads, what we see in our numbers here, where Christus says that we are inefficient, that we have too much patient contact per nurse. And those numbers are out. Those are proprietary numbers. They cannot be public, but they are referred to. They hired a company that checked how many so-called contact hours per patient we have, and we are higher than what they call a peer group of hospitals. Well, that's the whole idea of a union-organized hospital, is to have a more patient contact than non-union hospitals. This is something that we actually want and prefer. Now, it's a little more expensive, yes, but I think in the long run, it's actually, it can be cost-effective to have more patient contact.
Why is that? What do you mean?
Well, there are statistics out there that we have, and of course statistics can be used for either direction, we know that too, but that your outcomes, your clinical outcomes tend to be better with more patient contact per nurse, which means the healing can be a little faster, problems can be discovered earlier, people literally leave the hospital faster and healthier and don't come back as quick, and that's cost effective. Not necessarily so much for the hospital itself, but for healthcare in general, because somebody has to pay for that.
We're talking to Torsten Rode and Gail Williams of the New Mexico chapter of the Nurses and Technicians Union at Christus St. Vincent Hospital. So, I mean, I was hoping that either or both of you could really describe what your work is like to make this whole question of staffing ratios real to us. So, on some given day where you're short-staffed, mm-hmm. what kind of problems occur? What kind of dangers to the patients occur or could occur?
I'm going to be somewhat careful. Statistically, there's more danger there. The first thing that's going to happen is that the nurse herself, himself, will cut their time off. That means their breaks, their moments to sit down and take a breather. Those are the first things to go. When I have an extra patient or I don't have a secretary on the ICU, we work a lot without techs. That means we do what's called total patient care. If there's a bed is soiled or so, we have to take care of that, which is fine. A lot of our patients now tend to be quite heavy, so it becomes a really issue if you're short-staffed, I don't have the other nurse available as easily to help me.
To help lift
this person, to get him cleaned up immediately. But honestly, the first person that will, at least from my experience, personal experience, and also what I see on the unit, that will always take the hit is the nurse itself.
And so maybe the patients get almost as good service from the nurses, but the nurses go home more tired and more stressed at the end of the
burned
day.
Burned out, yes. Oh, yeah. Very much so.
Is burnout a problem in the profession?
Very much so. A very big profession. A lot of nurses don't make it through the first year in nursing.
Now, what about the length of shifts? Is that something that is an issue? How long is a nursing shift?
Well, we have 8-hour shifts, 10-hour shifts, 12-hour shifts, and we have some princess shifts that are 4-hour shifts for some people, and we feel like that kind of flexibility is good for the various kinds of nurses we have. Some may have young families. Some may be taking care of older adults, parents. So we've always tried to negotiate for very flexible scheduling. But we also have several units that all they have, it's exclusive 12-hour shifts. It's easier to schedule that way, according to management, but it makes for a very long day. So we're doing everything there, but we also have the 12-hour long shifts.
Why is it easier to schedule? What about 3 8-hour shifts?
Well, if you have to put a 12-hour, if you have to do a shift for 28 days, then you only need
you divide by two instead of dividing by three.
Right.
Yes.
And
but still, I mean, what happens to nurses during the last? Okay, you've been working 8 hours. You've got another 4 hours to go. Mm-hmm. Given what you just said, Torsten, I would think you'd be pretty tired.
Well, we're not going to address it so much in our specific negotiations here with Christus. However, of course, if you look at nursing in general, there are statistics out there that do say that stuff happens more frequently or the danger is greater for med errors, for example, or for other errors in the last 4 hours of the shift.
Yeah.
Now, those we try to address with proper breaks, with being able... And our unit very specifically on the ICU with a staff, with a charge nurse that is available, doesn't have her own patient or his own patients, which we now often don't have. That means when we short staff, the charge nurse, which is kind of overlooking the nurse's operation of the day in the unit, don't have patients. And then they can help me if something happens, or they can double check, or they can say, hey, wait a minute. You know what's going on. If they themselves have two patients, that's another safety net that we're cutting that could help prevent doesn't mean, of course, automatically something will happen. But over time, statistically, probably is a bigger chance that things happen if we start cutting on the margins of those safety nets.
So what is the nurses union looking for at this point in the issues surrounding staffing and staffing ratios? What are you hoping to achieve in your contract negotiations, and what are they hoping to achieve, Krista St. Vincent?
Well, we're hoping to achieve safe staffing standards. And
safe, above all, safe for the patient, but also, from what I'm hearing, safe for the nurses themselves.
Right, and if it's good for the patient, I can guarantee it's going to be good for the nurses. Now, the hospital has recently informed us that they want to pursue magnet status with Krista St. Vincent, which
magnet is status.
Right, and magnet status is this prestigious gold seal for hospitals. Only about 6.6 of the hospitals in this country have magnet
percent.
Status.
6.6%.
Yeah, 6.6%. Anyway, they want to go down this path of getting this magnet status, which is, well, I should go back and tell you where it comes from. The magnet recognition program was created by the American Nurse Association as a profit-making venture. And it's the magnet program is run by the American Nurses Credentialing Center. And it is more than happy to come and check out your hospital and after you spend thousands of dollars applying for fees to it, and then they'll come out and send consultants and help you to learn how to jump through all the hoops.
But what is it?
Well, it's a program that it's one of those top-down processes that, like so many other high-priced consultant-driven programs that provide no real guarantee of patient care or creation of conditions that protect nurses' working conditions. But what it does is it sounds good, and it's supposed to improve patient outcomes. And to the point where, you know, if you're designated, if you fulfill all the criteria and you're designated as a magnet hospital, you have the designation for 4 years, and then you can basically be advertised as a preferred employer. And in some cases, you can ask for more money from third-party payers because you are magnet status. So,
but I mean, what are they evaluating when they evaluate you for magnet status?
They're evaluating patient outcomes and
a lot of it. What they evaluate is really processes that you have in place. And I actually have some printout here that you have committees in place and that you have a leadership council. And I mean, certain things are just really kind of how you implement improvements in the hospital.
And so Krista St. Vincent wants to get magnet status.
Well, that's what they say in the ads. We actually never heard that before.
Uh-huh.
We didn't hear that in our negotiations. We didn't hear that in any kind of meetings with our chief nursing officer. But it did show up on one of those ads I mentioned earlier.
And so how does that affect what you are asking for? What is it that the nurses are looking for, the nurses union?
Well, we want to have staff. We want to continue with our staffing ratios and something that we can have that's enforceable so that there is an accountability factor to it, because we understand that even with our penalty, which was supposed to be the exception rather than the rule, that the hospital disregarded that practice and they paid over 800 times last year to, you know, various nurses and techs for not having their department staffed adequately.
So basically, what I hear you saying is they would rather pay the penalties than staff to a full level?
Well, I'm not sure if it's that or if it's that
or just
they
too
don't,
hard to
you know, that they say that, you know, they say they're always recruiting and, you know, recruiting new people, but sometimes if you and they're using travelers and they're using agency.
What are travelers?
Travelers are nurses that come in and take a temporary assignment, 13 weeks, 26 weeks, and work in our hospital. They're usually from another community. Their housing is paid for. It costs the hospital a lot more money to have a traveler than it does to have a full-time employee who has to have health insurance benefits and all their other benefits. So in some ways, I think they may think they're getting a better deal by having a traveler because they don't have to pay the benefits.
So again, what you are looking for as a union is to be involved in not only determining the staffing ratios, but also enforcing them or making sure that they are enforced.
That's a very, very good analysis there. That's actually exactly what we want. We want to be part of it. We want to be part in the discussion. We want to be part in developing maybe updated ratios, you know, or maybe more flexible ratios. But we want to have a voice in it, and we also want to have a veto right in it. And not just giving it up, but we have what was proposed by Christos is that it's really in the discretion of the chief nursing officer together with, in this case, her superior, which is then the chief operating officer, that they basically have the final say. And we say, well, we've been a union hospital for 35 years, and it worked very well, sometimes better than others. I mean, there's always room for improvement. However, when Christos came in and in the community and bought this hospital, they knew we were a unionized hospital, and we just expect them to respect that and treat us as an equal partner in these discussions. Now, there's certain things that Christos has, you know, can make decisions if they're buying new properties or, you know, what they do with their doctors. But nursing specific, they should respect, or they have to respect, the bargaining unit that we are. And these bargaining unit means this is all what we agree on is for all nurses, even the ones that are not in the union. We want them to basically immediately cease to put out emails in the hospital internet, the internal internet called Vintranet, that tells people how to exit the union. And how
they're trying to get people, they're sending emails to people trying to get them to quit the union.
Well, they don't say it so much, but they tell them outlining the process very specifically.
Here's
how you quit the union. And we have those emails. And that just shows, you know, for us, it's like what we really want is we want to collaborate. We all want this to be a better hospital. We all want this to be a better, bigger part of the community. That's our wish, too. I fail to understand why this has to be a contrary process. Why can't it be a collaborative process where we work on a win-win situation,
right,
where everybody walks away and says we did well for ourselves, but also for our patients. And that is what we don't see. It's a very drawn-out process. It's very in the minutiae, and it's very much drawn out in the paper and in ads, and a lot of information we're finding out that way. And there's just not a level of trust there from both sides, I have to say. The level of trust that a really serious, successful negotiation needs.
Now, talk about the term collective bargaining and how it applies to the nurses' union in this negotiation.
The collective bargaining process is conducted through the existing relationship that the union has with the hospital management, and we have labor management meetings that we would meet fairly frequently, sometimes every week, sometimes every other week. But it was a time where issues, working conditions, could be brought to the table for discussion and hopefully resolution. And we didn't necessarily open articles in the contract. We just dealt with situations where improvement was needed, kind of like our own PI kind of, you know, process improvement. And we often worked together on if we had a problem with not having enough critical care nurses, how we could work on growing our own from within. We did a lot of collaborative work, and we, even up until about a year ago, we've done quite a bit of collaborative work with the management of St. Vincent's Hospital. So in the collective bargaining process, we have the right to negotiate, or I should say bargain for working conditions. That is our right. And it's a little disappointing to sit at the negotiating table this year and realize that the other side doesn't want to bargain over working conditions this year. They want us to have a committee process of 10 people for staffing, and they want 5 to be management, and they want 4 of them to be chosen by us and 1 that we can agree upon. They don't want it, you know, they don't want to put any of anything that's agreed upon in writing, which doesn't sit well with any of us, because we need to be able to have something that is reliable and enforceable. And if you're going to spend that much money on consultants and that much money on bringing in the workers to discuss all of this, and then in the end you can do whatever you want today because, you know, we don't have enough staff on one floor or another, or, and it even impacts us in terms of their management rights, where they are asking, you know, their proposals on the table are going to take us back 20, 30 years ago when we did have to work 6 days in a row, when we did work more than one schedule change in a week. I mean, a lot of young nurses don't realize that the things that we worked for in that contract took us a long time to get, but it was because the working conditions were really not healthy. And so we hate to lose that, and we hate to lose, you know, we don't want to go to a place where it's mandatory overtime, or where it's a situation where management has the right to determine what the mix of people on the in the department will be. And I say that because I think it could be detrimental to the safety of our patients and also for the safety of the nurses. I mean, if you need 5 nurses and 2 techs or 2 aides, and you end up having 2 nurses and 5 techs, I can tell you that the outcome and the kind of care that will be done will be completely different. And those are the kind of issues that we are in earnest conversation with them about. And we hope to be able to have some kind of understanding so that we can, you know, if they're willing to negotiate in good faith, I really feel like they should be willing to put it in writing and have it be part of our contract. Otherwise, all bets are off. I don't know why we would want to pursue this avenue, because all it does is undermine the collective bargaining process.
We're talking to Gail Williams and Torsten Rode of the Nurses and Technicians Union at Christus St. Vincent Hospital. Now, there's another area that we haven't talked about, which is this question of succession. And there is, well, you tell us what succession is and what that means for a nurse's contract.
Well, there's an article in our contract, both for the nurses and the techs, and it's called successorship language, and that is protection so that in the event that the hospital should sell or lease the hospital to another group, that by law they would have to give notice of a certain amount of time to the union. And once the new buyers came in, that they would have to sit down and bargain with the staff that is there. They can't just come in and slash your wages in half the first day they get there.
Or fire everybody.
Right, or fire everyone.
And,
you know, so it's a very crucial article to those of us that live in this community. And
you have it now.
And we have it now. Mm-hmm. It's in our contract right now. But the Christus St. Vincent negotiating management team does not see that there's any reason to continue with that article, which raises questions for all of us. You know, why wouldn't they want successorship in there? And so far, we really haven't had satisfactory answers to those questions.
One of the things in the literature that you put out, which is on your website, was that the representatives in the negotiating process right now are from a law firm that is known for union busting and is for known for defeating the Teamsters and things like that. Tell us more about that.
Well, I'm not in the negotiating team, so I don't know so much about that. But I know that we followed it up, and yes, they brought in a group from, I want to say, San Francisco.
San Francisco.
Yep.
Winston and Strom, I believe, is the name of the law firm. And I think that this was a very deliberate decision. And we have two very high-powered attorneys that are negotiating for the hospital. And it's been interesting.
Gil, you are on the negotiating team. I mean, what are these conversations like? I mean, I'm trying to imagine being in your shoes, being on a union, being basically a blue-collar worker, which is what, frankly, nurses are. I mean, highly educated blue-collar workers, but nevertheless, nobody's getting rich doing it. You don't have stock options. It's a non-profit hospital. We can talk about that in a moment. But you have gone through the process of fighting for your rights, again, not as I, as far as I can see, not to have any special privileges, but simply to have good working conditions and good patient care. So now you're sitting at the table negotiating with people who are from a union-busting law firm and who are, I mean, what's it like?
Oh, it's difficult. It's hard. It's very difficult. And it's a challenge because we're sitting here trying to hang on to language that we remember when we were able to not have to work every weekend. You know, when we finally got the language that said we will work every other weekend. And we were happy when we were able to get language that said for those people whose lifestyle works, where they have, you know, families and they have to work every weekend, and we were able to get them a decent weekend bonus for working that, we remember when we did that. Now we see their proposals, and every single article has been opened up, and every single article has been examined, and there is a lot that has been taken out. And they say it's because they're becoming more nimble, and they needed to clean up the language. But basically, I think this has been a real attack on the union contract.
Now, we also see and the people that do work on a salaried basis that do not get overtime paid, and I'm talking about what we call secondary providers, like PAs, physician assistants, nurse practitioners, managers, you know, entry-level managers, I want to call them, the ones that are directly above us. And those people working so hard and so many hours, and they're there at all times. And if that's the flexibility and nimbleness they're talking about, then we know what we're going to have to expect. You know, that we can get called in at any time, that we can call it at weekends. And flexibility is nice. We are nurses by design flexible. That's what we are all day.
By training,
and by practice, and by just how we think, we have to do that. And so we need to be able to have some protection behind that, and enforceable protection. We are a union hospital. That means management does not have the unilateral right to decide what staffing is about, and that's what we're fighting for here very hard.
Now, there are a lot of special cases. I mean, nursing, it's not factory work. It's people work, and it's cultural work, and it is community work, and it's medical work, and all these things put together, and so you're juggling all kinds of things. But, for example, what happens if you or what are the issues around staffing when you have, for example, elderly patients, when you have suicidal patients, when you have patients with really major special needs who come in?
If you have someone who is elderly and needs and requires a great deal of assistance, both physically, emotionally, psychologically, in order to provide good care, it's going to take time. So, and likewise, if you have someone who comes in and requires a psychiatric evaluation, I mean, those people they require your full attention and your full focus too. And so just about anybody, I mean, I can't think of anyone unless it's someone who comes in because they may have, you know, broken their toe or something. There's, you know, only the very minor things go by without, and even those people, their toe still really hurts and they still are going to need, you know, TLC and appropriate care.
And I'll tell you, I mean, probably any human being listening to this show can say, and with great respect, you don't get it from your doctor. Your doctor is there for a couple of minutes and then leaves. I mean, I've been in the emergency room with other people who are waiting for care, and if I weren't there as sometimes as a companion, one wonders what people do who don't have companions, who don't do families. That's kind of, at least used to be, the nurse's job was to be for them medically and also personally.
And there's other factors too. There's social factors and other medical factors. It is safe to say that people in a hospital nowadays are a lot sicker than they used to be. They get sent home a lot earlier where they used to be, you know, used to be for an appendix, you were in the hospital for 2 weeks. Now you go home after a couple of days. So the people you actually deal with are a lot sicker. I talked earlier a little bit about it. One thing that we feel literally in our bags is obesity. We have a lot more heavy patient, and we deal with that every day. And it's literally breaking America's nurses' backs, and I mean maybe everywhere. And so instead of getting more help and support and getting more equipment and more techs, and we're actually getting less.
So you basically need some very strong people, techs, you call them technicians.
Some hospitals have lift teams. They have teams that actually do that.
Yeah.
Yes, it would help very much. We have an issue that we dealing with every day is sitters. We used to have be able to get people that sit with patients, suicide patients, they still get sitters anytime, suicidal patients. But we have sometimes confused patients or people that are going through withdrawal, that instead of having somebody there that could help, you know, kind of redirecting them, which can be very successful, we might have to restrain physically or chemically so that they're safe. Because we cannot be there all the time as nurses. And it's very, very hard nowadays to get sitters. They cost money. And
is a sitter a nurse?
It's usually a CNA, a nursing assistant,
okay.
Tech, depending on what
certified
you call them.
Certified nursing assistant.
Yes. And and we used to be able to much easier getting sitters. And now it's becoming a real issue. And
I mean, just for reasons of...
Lack of availability.
Staffing.
Yes, staffing.
Oh, it's not just staffing issues. It's like they're not... The market of available sitters isn't there?
It's tough to keep CNAs. That's a tough job.
I don't know. We just don't seem to have the sitters that we need. Mm-hmm. And management hasn't been real forthright with us on what's happening with the sitter program, although the union has repeatedly requested for some, you know, guidance on how we keep enough sitters around to make sure that our patients are safe. But going back to your question about, you know, what a patient requires, I think it is really important to point out that the patient is so much more than their physical self. And that's why it's, you don't know if something, you think that you should be able to take care of that patient in X number of minutes, but it's not always that way because they don't always fit into a nice, neat little box, you know. And sometimes someone might want to share something that's really been worrying them.
And that's part of their healing.
And that's part of their healing. And that's, you know, what nurses, you know, quote as time management, because far better for you to spend the time with that patient and let them, you know, say what they need to say and be behind and, you know, spend the rest of the day catching up. But those are decisions that nurses need to make every day on every shift.
Even as it is now.
Even as it is now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just brings up, you know, that our working conditions need to be flexible for us as well. And we need to be able to take care of ourselves mm-hmm. in the process.
Let's talk for a moment about Christus St. Vincent Hospital. Christus is a corporation that has a number of nonprofit hospitals, several dozen of them, I think.
39.
It's 40, yeah.
Yeah, we're their 40th, I believe, in the United States. Christus is a Catholic health organization from Houston, Texas, and I believe they have 40 hospitals, counting ours, and I think they have several in Mexico.
And it's a nonprofit organization, and Santa Fe is the only unionized hospital of the 40 hospitals they have. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I understand one, maybe some of the Mexico.
In Mexico, they're, by government law, they are unionized in Mexico.
Right. Well, Mexico also has universal health care.
Right.
But that's another story.
Yes.
So how, I mean, they're a nonprofit, but no one says nonprofits can't make a profit. They run in the black, they run in the red. There was just an article in the Albuquerque Journal that addressed how much money the St. Vincent made. What was it, last year or the year before?
It was in 2009, and this was out of July 17th, the Albuquerque Journal, where it states that the nonprofit Christus St. Vincent Regional Medical Center cleared $21.3 million in revenue after expenses.
$21.3 million in revenue after expenses. Okay, so more or less, how many nurses do you have in the hospital?
Total employment, probably about 540.
Ladies and gentlemen, hang on one second. Okay, so that comes out to approximately $40,000 per nurse.
Wow, that'd be a nice bonus.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of people in the team that help. I mean, we should count everybody.
No, I'm just saying. I mean, there's a lot more employees than the 540. Mm-hmm. And in fact, this is a, Christus St. Vincent is a very large employer,
yes,
in Santa Fe County.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is. And but the I think the most shocking part of the Albuquerque Journal was that it stated what the CEO's compensation for 2009 was.
What was that?
That was $615,000, up from about $5,200,000 on the hospital's 2008 report, which is an increase of about 18%.
Almost $100,000.
Yeah, or $95,000.
And so the idea of profit sharing or anything like that does not seem to exist at this point.
No, it doesn't. And the article in the journal was pretty interesting because Mr. Valdez was quoted as saying...
Mr. Valdez is who now?
He is our chief executive officer.
Okay.
He is quoted as saying, "We are not for profit and anything we make..." He said, we are a not-for-profit, and anything we make in net income gets reinvested in ourselves. So, anyway, he received a $95,000 pay increase. And the nurses in techs received no raise that year at all.
Uh-huh. I think there's another issue that I would like to bring up, which is the emphasis that Santa Fe as a community has put on trying to keep nurses, firefighters, police, teachers, and so on in mm-hmm. the community. HomeWise, for example, has done a terrific job on making housing available so that people who are in these basically service jobs, blue-collar jobs, and so on can afford to live in the community that they serve. And so that's a big piece. And the part which we started to talk about a moment ago was the cultural piece. So that you've been working, how many years have you been a nurse, Gail?
I've been a nurse 33 years.
33 years. So in Santa Fe, you get to know the various cultural groups and what their needs are as patients, as families, and so on. And maybe you could talk about the experience of that and the importance of that for nurses.
Well, I can try to. It's we have such a diverse, you know, diverse community right now, but, you know, there's the Native American culture, the Hispanic culture, the Anglo culture, the Tibetan culture. We have so many interesting groups of people who have come to Santa Fe and made it their homes that we're just fortunate that we have such diversity, and we also have so much harmony. And I think this is a very respectful city of differences, and we have a lot of people from South America and, you know, various parts of the world and Europe, and we
Torsten himself.
Torsten himself sitting next to me. Yeah.
It is represented in our workforce. I mean, you do see all these groups working at St. Vincent. So we're not just working for the community or with the community. We are the community. We are here in town. We live here, or in Española, or in Las Vegas, or, you know, in Powake, and all up down to Bernalillo, maybe. And so this is northern New Mexico, in right there in the hospital. And these are the people we serve are our neighbors, our friends, our family, our, you know, car mechanics, or they're our hairdresser and teachers. And so we are not just serving the community. We are part of the community. When we go out in the community, we meet our patients at Walmart or at Target or wherever we go. And so we are a big, big, big part of it. And that's how we like it.
So we've just got about 5 minutes left. What can people do who are listening right now, who are interested in getting involved in this issue, say who do support collective bargaining, who want the nurses in Santa Fe to stay in Santa Fe?
Well, I think in a lot of ways the community is responding. We see the letters to the editors, and we see emails that we're getting, and we see the handshakes we're getting, and people did come out for our little rally we had. But the more the better. If they can come out and send emails, they can go on the union website and see, and I think you can give it to them in a second here, and support us. I feel very strongly community is behind us. I became a nurse just fairly recently, last few years. I was in the car industry. I was in the hotel industry. I worked for big corporations. I worked for Sheraton and other big corporations. And I chose this career path because it really called to me. And of all the nurses I met, most of them by far are really extremely dedicated and caring people. And we miss these nurses with a lot of experience that seem to be falling by the wayside a little bit in the hospital now, that have the 20, 30, 40 years patient care experience that I need. I can learn a lot of things in books and in seminars, but I can learn a lot more from a nurse that says, I've seen this before and here's what's going to happen. And I've seen it so often that their intuition was right. And whatever they get paid, they should get it paid. They shouldn't worry about that. They should just pay it.
Well, I just want to say that the community has been phenomenal in their support of the nurses and technical unit as we go through this very difficult negotiations. They have been there for us in a big way, and every one of you know who you are. And we do appreciate all the hard work and the commitment, because in the end, this is our community hospital. It's our hospital, and we want to continue to have it to be our hospital. And we're going to go in there, and we're going to continue to negotiate and bargain. And we're hoping that we can come up with an agreement that will be for the best interest of our patients, as well as for the nurse and technical staff and their working conditions, and that we can have things that will be enforceable so that we can, go forward. We'll be happy. You know, we can look at acquiring prestigious magnet status, but we're only going to be able to do that if we can continue to give the kind of care that our patients deserve from us. And that is our commitment to this community.
Now, there's a rally this weekend.
This Sunday, coming up July 24th, we will have a rally at Our Lady of Guadalupe Church at 6:30. And we will have speakers and music, and we invite everyone in the community to come out and join us. It's going to be a big celebration and an enjoyable event, and we'd love to have you all there with us. So please come.
And one more thing I want to say: we're not fighting against Christus. This is not what we're doing here. We want to work with Christus. We want Christus to be a valuable part of this community, and they're doing a lot of good things, and we appreciate that. But we also want to be a voice in that process.
Gail Williams is Vice President of the 1199 New Mexico Chapter of the Nurses Union at St. Vincent Hospital, and Torsten Rode is an ICU nurse and delegate to the union. For more information, you can go to ChristusLaborActionSantaFe.org. Thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.